If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that tax bill. It's going to maybe cut $1 trillion from two of the things that Americans most rely on, and that's food stamps and Medicaid. One in five Americans are enrolled in Medicaid. One in eight Americans receive food stamps. Think about that. Those are problems we should address at their core. But in the meantime, what about the people who are relying on that money? The federal budget that the Congress is grappling with would slash a lot of those in order to either balance the budget or at least get it through Congress. Let's talk a little bit about that with Niall Stanage, who is a White House columnist. You read him in The Hill, you see him on News Nation. Niall, you're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Great to be here in one of my favorite cities. Go ahead.
So what about this? What, first of all, would you have us know today?
Well, I think that the key takeaway is that President Trump's trip to Capitol Hill yesterday to try to bring reluctant Republicans on board was not immediately effective, certainly, and that is a problem for him. The math in the House of Representatives is very, very tight. Ultimately, it may well be that Republicans do all get on board together with this bill, but they have not done so as we're speaking right now.
So what is the math they're trying to accommodate here, revenue versus expenditures? What's going on here?
So without getting too deep into the weeds of that, I mean, the issue is that this bill would extend the tax cuts that President Trump pushed forward in 2017. Yep. That then means that reduces the government coffers by an estimated around about $3.8 trillion over the next decade. That means people who don't like those burgeoning debts and deficits want some way to make that money back, at least in part. And the big ways for doing that so far have been to suggest upping the strictness of the requirements for Medicaid, which would leave fewer people covered, and also doing away with some green energy tax credits.
Another way would be to let those tax cuts from 2017 expire. Everybody would pay a little bit more. And then is it true we would be able to keep the programs at the level they're currently at?
Yes, we would. I mean, it's of course worth noting that the U.S. government already operates at a deficit, but the trajectory would not change under the idea that you have just put forward, letting the tax cuts expire, not cutting the other programs. That would leave the status quo in place.
The president has said, though, that he wouldn't touch Medicaid. Is Medicaid going to get touched?
I think it is going to get touched, and really the debate is the extent to which it is going to get touched. Republicans are taking refuge in the idea that what they're really after is waste, fraud, and abuse. But we've seen a nonpartisan body, the Congressional Budget Office, suggest that the current proposal would leave more than 8 million people who currently have health insurance without health insurance. That obviously is a politically unpalatable option, and so that's something that Republicans are grappling with right now.
What did I see, though? The most painful part of this, though, actually might come to bear after Trump has left office. Some of this is actually going to be delayed. The tax cut will be enjoyed currently, but the cuts will actually come later on. They can sell that as a win, but it won't actually be felt until a little later on. Is that true?
I think that is broadly true. It is certainly the case that, in general, the tax cuts would simply be extended and are already in effect. So, therefore, the extension would take immediate effect. It is true that the cuts would be phased in because you can't simply change the rules for Medicaid overnight. And so that would take some time to come on stream. Of course, if one were to be cynical about it, one would also say that that means that the cuts could be pushed past the midterm elections for a start, and that that might spare the Republicans political negative consequences from these cuts.
If, though, the states have to pick up the difference, you can say whatever you want, but the practical matter is people are going to need to eat, people are going to need health care. The states will then have to pick up the difference. What happens then?
Well, one optimum is that the states spend their own money on picking up that difference and have to raise that revenue in some other way. Or the other alternative is that the states themselves basically make their criteria for Medicaid stricter, and that therefore results in fewer people with that health insurance or health insurance through Medicaid than would otherwise be the case. Either way, I mean, the states are looking at either having to raise more money or treat fewer people.
Is it possible, though, that these programs are bloated and that maybe you should have to refile every month in order to get aid, and you have to prove that you're looking for work, et cetera? Just talk a little. I don't know if that's waste, fraud, or abuse, but let's just talk about the parameters through which somebody qualifies. Should that be rejiggered?
Well, that's such a subjective view, really, as to where you fall on that question. I don't think anyone would deny that there are, at the very least, some cases of fraud or some people getting around the rules. The question is, if in the effort to counter that, you kick people off health insurance who should actually be entitled to it and who perhaps fall through the cracks, then yes, you have dealt with some degree of fraud or waste, but you have also denied people health insurance who may be in very serious health circumstances. Is that a bargain you're willing to make? I think that's a question to which people give lots of different answers, partly depending upon their political ideology.
I think it's in Florida. You don't get the quote-unquote food stamps. You don't get SNAP benefits unless you are looking for a job, working, or doing some sort of community service. This program, as I understand it, you would have to be engaged in community service, attending school, or participating in some sort of work program in order to continue to get Medicaid. And I suspect there's a population out there that thinks that's fair. You shouldn't just be sitting on your duff. You ought to be doing something to contribute to society and yourself in order to get the aid. Okay, there's the other side. What do you think about that?
I think that is an argument that certainly a large number of people agree with. I think my counter to it, to take a devil's advocate position, is it's not always that clear cut. There was a very fiery exchange on Capitol Hill just a few days ago where there is already an exception for pregnant people from the conditions you're talking about in this proposal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the left-wing Democratic congresswoman from New York, was asking, well, what happens to people who suffer a miscarriage? There wasn't really a clear answer to that. Are they expected to work? Would a lot of people not consider that callous if they were expected to work? These are the kind of questions that I think are important to answer with some specificity, and we lack that specificity right now.
At the same time, the president is looking for a couple $100 billion for a dome to protect the United States, like the one Israel has. It's interesting to me that if the economics are this tight, that we would put on something that is that ambitious. Now, what do you make of that? Now, and the numbers are drastically different, but what do you make of that?
It's certainly true that that is something the president was pushing just yesterday. I think that the president, whether you love him or hate him, is very good at branding. And this idea of a golden dome that would protect the continental United States has an appeal as a slogan. Obviously, an anti-missile system that would have that kind of capability would be enormously expensive. And we have seen in the past defense projects that have overrun in cost terms by colossal amounts. So if you're an American who is concerned about the debt and the deficit and the amount of money we have to pay to service that debt, I'm not sure how enthusiastic you're going to be about such an ambitious project.
I just wonder if we need it. Are things so dire that we need a golden dome? And if they are, is the dome the answer, or maybe being better players on the planet the solution? I just wonder if we really have to have that. It sounds ludicrous to me in a way.
It does, and to many people. I think the parallel, though, that some people draw is then President Reagan and what was somewhat derisively known as the Star Wars idea, which is a sort of precursor, in a sense, to Trump's Golden Dome. As I say, that was derided at the time. In retrospect, some people have said, well, it actually put pressure on the then Soviet Union to keep up, and the Soviet Union didn't have the money to keep up, and it all contributed to the fall of communism. That may be too neat an explanation for some. It's also worth saying that there is no... I mean, I guess China would be the equivalent to the Soviet Union in the 80s now. I'm not sure it's an exact parallel, but that's the argument that I think is put forward.
Niall Stanage is a White House columnist at The Hill. You see him on News Nation frequently, and it's really nice to talk to you today. Thank you for your insight, Niall.
Thank you.